over that office, and potentially gang enforcement can be used as a cover for racial profiling, which is not appropriate. So the question I would ask is why am I sitting in front of you today? And I've made it a priority in my life to learn about racism. And I want to say that what we're talking about is racism in racial profiling. We're not really talking about race-based profiling, which means everyone profiles everyone else according to race. We're really talking about a system of white supremacy. That's kind of our legacy. And I want to say that personally, I don't believe that I've ever been racially profiled by the police. And so when I leave this meeting today, it's over for me. I don't have to think about it. But for any person of color, when you leave here, when you come here, every place you go, it's got to be in the back of your mind. So, and I want to say that for white people, I think given the weight of our history, there is no shame in talking about or admitting racism. That's the first step in our healing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Marino. Mr. Wilson.
Yes, my name is James Wilson. I'm from North Portland area, Roosevelt area. Graduated from Roosevelt in 69. Thank you all for being here, Mayor, Commissioners, and the Police Chief. What I feel about this racial profiling thing is it's been here. You know, I mean, it's not something that just happened yesterday. It's been here. I've gone through so many decades of changes since 1969 up until this point, and seen in the workplace, local city government, schools, high schools, whatever you have you. So, I mean, it's an ongoing problem. And as Commissioner Zaltzman said, it's not going to happen in his lifetime or mine. It will not be solved by that time. You know, I mean, just because you have a black president or something like that, and you know, that doesn't heal the wounds or bring racial equality or whatnot. There's always going to be a bias or some type of stereotype with racial profiling. The thing of it is that the police do have to present themselves, I think, in a more, I don't want to say professional manner, but a more humanitarian type manner, you know, to really, you know, okay, this is my job. Don't take the job home with you at night. But maybe sometimes you have to take the job home or practice these things when you're not on the job, you know, relating to the people in the community. You know, that's important because the people are scared, you know, believe it or not, and they don't trust some issues. So bringing this particular implementation across is important. What the police are trying to do now and what they're striving for, it's a good idea. You know, I'm also with Oregon Action, been with them almost a year, and I'm the director of KINOG, which stands for Kids in Need of Guidance. It's a gang prevention program. We'd love to get with the police commissioner and chief and get some stuff going, you know. It'd be great. We're open. You know, we've got the website and everything. And it's about our youth. It's the youth that need to be reached in order for the future to be racially equal and whatnot. See, it's the youth. It's not really us, but we have to start it now, today. You know, not, you know, it's here, it's been here. And the only way we're going to change is to really put forth some action, in my opinion. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson, and thank all of you for your testimony. Thank you. Carla, the next three
are David Hardity, Joanne Bowman, and Cliff Walker. And they'll be followed by Ralph Nickerson, Dan Handelman, and Barry Joe Stoll.
Welcome. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome back to the City Council. Mr. Hardigee, I think you were first.
My name is Roger David Hardesty. I'm with the Oregon Action Strategic Advisory Council and a Portland resident. Thank you for permitting me to speak here today. Given sufficient time, I would spend more of it to express my appreciation to Chief Sizer for all the potential in her plan. It represents clear thinking, and I take it as an expression of an honest desire to ameliorate racism among city employees. That said, I have several contentions to make. As the plan itself says, it is only one step in a comprehensive attempt to eliminate inappropriate and adverse impact of law enforcement on communities of color. You, as city managers, need to take other significant steps if the Bureau's attempt to eliminate racial profiling is to be effective. You can do more than the chief and the public here represented. You can ensure that those who fail to provide our constitutional protections are identified and dealt with appropriately. These men and women are your employees. You must manage your personnel. I contend that City Council must renegotiate their contract with the Police Association so as to permit effective oversight of employees who do not respond to this proposed training. The Auditor, Human Rights Commissioner, and Police Commissioner must grant investigative authority to community members through the IPRB-CRC and the Human Rights CPRC. The people of Portland must perceive that their efforts to identify racism will lead to a discreet resolution based on civilian oversight. City Council must take responsibility for overseeing the implementation of this plan and keeping faith with the community. A plan is merely a statement of intention. City Council holds a responsibility for overseeing and funding its implementation. I would ask you to join the mayor in setting community expectations about the implementation of this plan. Are you all in consensus that that the Portland police will not enforce constitutional protections in your lifetime? Which parts of this plan will you fund? You must set our expectations as to a timeline. The listening session's final consensus was that the community should have this plan no later than January 2007. Portland Police Bureau participants told CPRC members in May that the simple remedy of handing out business cards at police community interactions was on hold pending the implementation of a $500,000 plan to develop e-citations. Strategies in the 4.2 range are on hold pending the implementation of a CAD system. In fact, these delays in getting this plan to your consideration today show the slippage which has already occurred. We now enter the final quarter of 2009. The plan before you still lists strategies that were to be completed by now, strategy 2.6. It suggests no new strategies as a result of community input in April. It is the January plan with a new cover page and paragraphs acknowledging that the community continues to take time from their private affairs to respond to the pernicious evil of racism.
I think you had more. Did you have more you wanted to say?
A couple more paragraphs. Thank you. Can we leave it to City Council, who has divided responsibility to address this practice across two portfolios and the Auditor's Office, to actually oversee implementation? This report calls for a review of progress with community input and setting 2010 targets this year. It's September. We better get cracking. How will City Council participate? Neither the Human Rights Commission nor its Community Police Relations Subcommittee ever held public debate on citizen input to the chief's plan. In fact, it was the police that typed these notes up for us, not the Community Police Relations Board. How is the community supposed to participate? Set our expectations for your oversight and our avenues of redress. That the Portland Police Bureau collects stop data, that they conscientiously produce notes documenting citizen input, astounds me. For these fine efforts and for the diligence of this plan, I commend them. Your review of our concerns, particularly civilian oversight, if incorporated, will go a long way to ensuring that Portland remains the city that works. Thanks.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Ms. Bellman, welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, City Commissioners. For the record, I'm Joanne Bowman. And I want to start off by also applauding Police Chief Rosie Sizer. I worked very closely with Rosie Sizer over 2 years on the then-mayor racial profiling committee and found her to be open, honest, and really has a genuine commitment to solving the issue of racial profiling. Having said that, there's still some concerns I have with the plan that's before you today. One thing is the plan relies heavily on efforts that have been identified from previous efforts to eliminate racial profiling, primarily diversifying the workforce. No matter how diverse the Portland Police Bureau becomes, if it is incorporated in a culture that is disrespectful to communities of color, all we will do is have people of color that are disrespectful to the communities that they serve. That is not an acceptable end to racial profiling. Training. I've had the opportunity to review several Portland police officer training videos. And let me tell you, they are not realistic. Unless the community has an opportunity to work with the police bureau to develop realistic training videos, what we're going to once again have is videos that the community laughs at. And I'll give you a quick example. There's a video that was done recently on traffic stops. Well, the person who was stopped was a pretty blonde woman. And guess what? The police were really polite to her. They chit-chatted. It was a very lovey-lovey interaction. We asked the training officers, well, what would happen if you replaced that pretty blonde woman with a person of color? Well, we treat everybody the same. Well, but of course, that has not been the experience of communities of color. So I think we really need to start training police officers in real-life experiences that people of color experience when they interact with police. We also need to disconnect the business cards from an issuance of a ticket or a warning. Over and over and over again in the community listening sessions and in the community meetings to discuss the police plan, the community members want to know who's stopping them. The problem with connecting it to a traffic ticket or a warning is that it's a punitive interaction. If our goal is to build relationships, then me as a community member should know who I'm engaging with, who's protecting and serving me in the community. And to tell the community we have to wait for $500,000 data collection system before the police can print out business cards, the community is not that stupid. If we wanted to get in our printed business cards, we could go back to our office today and put them on our printer and print them out.
So, Mayor Adams, Joanne and I served together.
Yes, we
in
did.
In the legislature. In fact, she is the only person that has ever been brought into Clan Moffett, which occurred on the House floor in a wonderful ceremony. So she's part of my clan.
Yes, she is.
So I just want to make sure one point I understand. So are you suggesting that if I were a pretty blonde woman, mm-hmm. when I got pulled over recently by a Portland police officer and was given a citation, I might not have gotten it?
Well, the officer may have been much politer to you when they issued you the citation. My point is that it matters.
That was the point at which you were to laugh.
I'm serious today, Commissioner.
I got a ticket, and I'm just wondering if I was pretty. Maybe Commissioner Fritz would not have got the ticket.
Well, Commissioner Leonard, I can tell you that I've also experienced getting a traffic ticket, and the Portland police officer that pulled me over was polite, respectful, and engaged me in conversation and dialogue. So I know it can happen in a very positive manner. But what I'm here to talk about today is the many, many times that it doesn't happen in that way.
I was actually just trying to make light of my own personal life situation.
I can do personal. I can do light.
He interrupted you.
Yes, sir.
And you get some more time for that.
Well, thank you.
The details matter here.
Yes,
I think your point and is so true in so many aspects of public service and providing public services. So right now the expectation is, or the assumption is that a business card is only provided when there's a ticket or warning and not an interaction if requested?
That's correct. And what the community asked for was any time a police-initiated stop happened, the community member should be able to expect a business card so that if there's a compliment to be given, people know who to compliment. If there is a concern about how the individual was treated, they know who that individual was. And what we're hearing from police on the street and community members is that they don't have to give out business cards. And even when people are being stopped and they ask for business cards, they're told no.
Thank you for the clarification.
You're very welcome.
Could you clarify, do you support giving written warnings versus verbal warnings?
Mayor Adams, Commissioner Fritz, I absolutely am fine with the warnings, verbal or written warnings, but I think the mistake is to connect that to a business card.
Right.
It's a totally separate activity. So if police want to give out written warnings, I have no problem with that. But I think connecting it to the business card somehow makes it punitive for the community.
Right. My concern was whether it would be considered more punitive to give a written warning rather than a verbal warning.
I believe that however the police bureau is comfortable with giving warnings, as long as it's a warning, it's fine. If it's verbal, it's fine. If it's written, it's fine.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So just to see if I can get this down to concrete so we can ask the chief about it, if there is going to be a in a traffic stop, that kind of official interaction, the business card should be provided. And in any other interaction should be at least provided upon request. Is that a fair summation?
No, Mayor. Okay. What the community has requested is that anytime the police initiate a stop, as the chief mentioned, it's professionalism, it's customer service. So whenever, if I stop you, and whether I do a walk and talk, whether I just ask you what you're doing, why you're doing it, what you're doing on the street, et cetera, at the conclusion of that stop, as a community member, I have an expectation that that police officer is going to give me a business card.
So when does clarification on that, having done ride-alongs and over the years, it's been a while, though, is that because it's sometimes not clear whether it was a stop or an interaction or what have you, I think it would be useful to say that if the public asks a member of the police bureau for their business card, because it's not clear how they managed to face each other, that they should at least provide it.
Well, Mayor Adams, I appreciate that clarification. I think the challenge with that is that unless we say blanket that police officers must give community members a business card at the conclusion of a police-initiated stop, if we're not real clear about that, what will happen is people on the street will be determining whether or not that was a stop, right? If you stop me and you search my pockets and you ask me what I'm doing, what am I doing in this neighborhood, in my mind, that is a stop, regardless of how the police bureau interprets that interaction.
So that if I'm a police... I can finish. If I'm a police officer, then any interaction, I should offer a business card.
Yes, you should. So it should be a good customer service, professionalism kind of thing. Thank you for your time. Here's my card. Any questions, feel free to contact me or the police bureau.
I'm just trying to understand it in my own mind down to behavioral. That's helpful. So any interaction, they should offer a business card.
That's right.
I actually very much agree with Joanne on that point. At the fire bureau, when a firefighter, whether they're an inspector or whoever, encounters any member of the public on any business-related item, it is automatic to give them a business card. Mm-hmm. I think your point is well taken.
Well, I think in every other bureau, at the end of the meeting, you give the card. You exchange cards, and it's part of community policing.
That's
why you want people to know each other's names.
That's
and, that it's not you get the card if it's a bad experience.
Right.
You want to exchange information.
That's right. I mean, that's how we're going to build true community policing. The community knows who is policing their community, and the community has some comfort that anytime they engage with a police officer, they'll know who that is.
And one needs to appreciate if you're in an encounter with a police officer, not necessarily even a bad one, if you have to proactively ask for the card, it's in as much as saying, give me your badge number.
That's right.
It's not a comfortable position to put anybody, so we need to take that angst out of that interchange and just have it be part of the protocol that a card is handed, asked for or not. I totally get why you're saying that, and I support it.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Commissioner Leonard. And my very last point my last point actually was raised by a statement that Chief Sizer made around the gang intervention, and it's a sorting process. And I put that in quote because that was the quote that the chief used. I am very concerned that we are, on one hand, raising millions of dollars to fight gang activity, and on the other hand, have dispersed the responsibility for eliminating racial profiling among so many different bureaus. There's a direct link between how we ask for gang dollars, how those dollars are used, and who is actually stopped and interrupted, whose behavior is stopped and interrupted on the street when we say we're trying to eliminate gang violence. I have an expectation that police officers are very well trained, and so they wouldn't stop every African-American male child between 12 and 24 to find out if they are involved in gang activity. I think that their training has to be much more detail to determine really who are the people involved in gang activity. My concern is that it appears that we're buying off community groups by giving them gang dollars. At the same time, we're ratcheting up police behavior to actually target those same youth in the community. And so we're sending mixed messages to the community by saying we're concerned about gang violence, so let's put millions of dollars into gang intervention programs, while at the same time we're ratcheting up programs like Operation Cool Down, and other police interdiction activities that are really so broadly focused that any African-American or Latino child could be impacted by police interaction.
So, Joanne, based on our friendship,
yes,
our colleague, and I think we are being former colleagues, and I would even say, go so far as to say we love one another.
We do.
I'm going to push back on that
okay.
a little bit. That was pretty charged language suggesting buying off community groups.
Do
you want to rethink that or explain it?
Well, I mean, what I'd like to do is explain it.
Okay.
Because I know that the intentions are to actually eliminate violence in our community. However, if we're putting money into specific organizations to target intervention with youth, and we're not looking at how it connects to racial profiling in the community, then we're not. Then we're doing apples and oranges. And so, in my view, we can't just on one hand be over here funding gang intervention programs, and on the other hand, not holding the police department accountable for what happens on the street when they're engaging with African American and Latino youth. What we know for sure is that less than 10% of youth are involved in gang activities.
That makes a lot more sense than your prior statement.
Well,
I would
thank
recommend
you.
In the future you explain it that way rather than saying they were bought off. I actually appreciate the explanation.
Well, Mr. Mayor and Commissioner Leonard, thank you for the opportunity to clarify my position.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And Ms. Bowen, to just follow on that, so you've explained what you see as a potential problem.
Yes.
What do you recommend as a solution?
I recommend as a solution that we need more people involved in the dialogue of determining how we use gang dollars when we write for federal money. Who's at the table? Who's making the link between what's going on in the police department to eliminate racial profiling and what's going on the street to make sure that youth are involved in positive, engaging activities? And it seems like those efforts are totally separate. And I would find it difficult if I was being paid by the city to actually look at it in a much broader perspective. How much, Mr. Mayor, Commissioner Leonard, did I answer that well?
Very well.
Oh, thank you.
And now the public knows why I actually went through an ancient ceremonial rite on Joanne's last day on the House floor in all seriousness that inducted her into Clan Moffat because of her ferociousness in fighting for the things she believes in. And it's a very small group that gets allowed in to my clan, and you are a member of it, and she was given the clan tartan as well.
I almost wore it today.
I wished you would have.
Commissioner Fritz.
If I might just comment, thank you for all of your devotion to this issue over many years and your leadership in the community, and thank you for coming in to tell us both the things that you like and the things that you can see areas for improvement. I thought many of your comments, I've written them down, and I think they're very good suggestions. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being here and your testimony. Mr. Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Mayor, council members, my name is Clifford Walker. I realize it'll take more than 3 minutes to get over the kinds of discussions I would like to have with the council, but I'll start now. I'm here because of President Barack Obama has asked the people to have a dialogue on race. I'm also here because U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder has accused people of being cowards about talking about race. And I'm hoping that the Portland City Council can prove Attorney General Holder wrong. I am the chairman of the Oregon Commission on Black Affairs, and I am here to invite members of the Portland City Council to have a public dialogue on race and racism, one we can share. We don't know how you think. We don't know what's going on in your heads. We don't know who our leaders are when it comes to this question on race and racism. I've had an opportunity to talk with Randy Linder. Amanda Fritz, Commissioner Fritz, said to me at a Human Relations Commission, oh, I had never thought of it that way. So I realized that we think very differently, but we have a problem to solve, and we need to come together and start talking about these things very candidly. I'm very disturbed because of what Commissioner Saltzman is saying he doesn't believe he will see it in his lifetime. I have a different vision. I've seen when the city opened up the drinking fountains to Negroes, housing to Negroes. I've seen things. I have a different vision, Commissioner Saltzman, that what can be done. I believe it can happen in our lifetime. People believe slavery would end in their lifetimes, but we have to have a vision that allow those things to happen. So I'm here to invite the council, and I hope you will accept a partnership with the Oregon Commission on Black Affairs so we can sit down and share with the public our thinking. Portland is an environment that is known to be white. And I think what people are saying is it's racist. People don't think about the fact that we have public high schools that are memorials to white supremacists and slave traders. We send our kids to these things. This is part of our environment. We have statues in our city parks. We have city parks that are named for racists and slave traders. This is our daily diet of an environment. Our city environment is polluted with symbols of racial hate and racial degradation, and people don't see it. So we have to have that dialogue, and we have to change Portland. Thank you very much for the opportunity to address you. And will you accept that invitation to partner with the Oregon Commission on Black Affairs?
Well, I would. I think the short answer is yes. The longer answer is I'd like you to work with Commissioner Amanda Fritz, and so we are coordinating our efforts with the newly ongoing funded Human Relations Commission. So we bring them into the conversation as well.
Okay, we.
Commissioner Fritz?
And if I might just comment, the particular issue that you brought to the attention of the Human Rights Commission and the meeting that I attended was on street names, which has been a contentious issue in this. I've learned a lot on that over the last 8 months, and in particular Jefferson, the street that goes right by this building. I also wanted to comment that after that conversation, I went to the 100th anniversary celebration at Jefferson High School, off Jefferson High School, the dinner at which a former ambassador to the United Nations spoke, and he addressed the issue. And he happened to be he is African American. I was impressed at the diversity of the participants at the 100th celebration of Jefferson, and learned a lot about the richness of the history of that school. The ambassador said that. He talked about the name Jefferson and how we remember who Thomas Jefferson was and some of the things that he did, which we don't currently espouse in any way, shape, or form, and also how the school has moved on and how people remembering is part sometimes of the honoring. And I think, too, that we do need to continue to have these conversations as to the statues and the names and how we move to a more egalitarian and a 21st century society.
Two short things before I conclude. People seem to understand why Jewish people are offended by swastikas and symbols of the Third Reich, but they don't seem to have that same understanding why black people are offended by slave traders and people who oppress. There's a story in the media right now about an 11, 12-year-old girl that was kidnapped and gone for 20 years. She was impregnated by her kidnapper, and the world just sees this as a very horrific experience. But that was the common experience of African girls. They were kidnapped and impregnated by their... And we don't seem to understand that when it happens to black people, it has the same significance when it happens to other human beings. And we haven't achieved, in many people's eyes, that we're fully human. There is no excuse for the racism in our city or the racial profiling. It should have been stopped a long time ago. And it is hard-pressed for us to say, you don't understand it, or you do understand it, and you can't fix it. And for many of us, it's unacceptable either answer, because it's way past due. And please come up with a dateline. We go out now and don't understand why we are being treated by the city of Portland the way we're being treated. Thank you.
So, Mr. Walker, I
I just have to, you and I have had this conversation in front of Jefferson High School, if you recall, one evening when I left, about this very issue. And I'm trying to remember the name of the woman who was African-American that Thomas Jefferson had the affair with.
Sally Hemings.
The irony of what you're saying is Thomas Jefferson had a long-term affair with Sally Hemings, of which there are prodigy, of which he had children, of which today he has great-grandchildren who are African-American, whose name not only is suggested for Thomas Jefferson when you read Jefferson, but ironically, his family, which includes African. So I'm not deluding, no. I'm not deluding your point, but I think there's a sweet irony.
I don't know how sweet it is. We're all products of that rape.
I understand that, but I'm just saying that I think there are a number of ways to look at issues, and there are experiences I have in my life that could cause me bitterness and anger, and I choose to look at them in a way that brings me growth and hope. And I'm just suggesting to you, your point is a good point, but this
is
a multifaceted problem. And I guess I have always viewed then I've stipulated Thomas Jefferson was a slave owner, but it's also there's some sweet irony that there are a prodigy of his that are African Americans today.
Sally Hemings was 12 years old. Thomas Jefferson was 46.
Understood.
Okay, thank you.
And I look forward to working with you. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Mr. Rocker. Carla, the next three
are Ralph Nickerson, Dan Handelman, and Barry Joe Stoll. And the last two who signed up were Leo Rhodes and Helen R. Sherman.
Who's the third person you called?
No, Dan. Oh, I'm sorry. That we have Cliff Walker.
No, Mr. Nickerson.
Ralph Nickerson. Dan Handelman and Barry Joe Stoll.
Stoll, okay. Mr. Nickerson,
yes.
Welcome to the City Council.
Thank you. I don't relish having to be here today because I enjoy my free time, and I'd like to thank all the people that volunteered to come up here and say something because I believe they feel the same way, that when you have to spend your time defending your civil rights, it's not full employment. And so I don't like to do it. But this brother today that got up here and said he had been pulled over 30 times, and he looked younger than me, somebody needs to get his name and find out why a guy would be pulled over 30 times in a short period of time. How does that happen? I think Chief Sizer is the right person for the job that is at hand. I have been in several meetings that I believe that she has a good handle on it. And we're moving along in the direction that I think that we should as far as the procedures that police should take in encountering these issues. But one thing that I would like the chief to take note of is that you need to define what reasonable safety is, because in the concerns of traffic, it's reasonable safety that should be the concern of the police. Okay, now I know there's a lot of guys out there that are in uniform that are doing gang work. Well, that's gang work, but traffic work, it should be based on reasonable safety. And so, and then when they get to your car, they need to tell you right up front why they pulled you over, because if they don't, it gives the appearance to me of impropriety of what they're doing, because they can later come back and say, okay, well, I could give you a ticket for that. And it creates animosity between that person that's being potentially profiled because they haven't been up front. And then the last thing that I want to say is that a lot of these issues that are involved in search and seizure really are in the 14th Amendment under equal protection. And when I drive around, I want to feel like I'm endowed. I've been here 57 years in Portland, and I want to feel like, Mayor Adams, if I see you at Baskin and Robbins and I get there before you, I want to get served before you. And that's the way I want to drive around Portland. Like, I am somebody because I am somebody. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Nickerson. Mr. Handelman.
Good morning, Mayor Adams, Police Commissioner Saltzman, and Commissioners Leonard and Fritz. We at Portland Cop Watch, my name is Dan Handelman, and we at Portland Cop Watch thank the Chief for providing this rare opportunity for public input on a Bureau policy. However, we are concerned that the community forums held earlier this year do not seem to have been incorporated into the Bureau's plan. Our organization had a seat on the Racial Profiling Committee that met in 2007 and 2008, and we feel that it's critical for Council to give direction to the Bureau if any of the public input you hear today points out improvements that can be made to the plan. We are pleased that the stops data for 2008 have finally been released. It was released in today's packet. They show alarmingly consistent numbers, though. The Bureau's plan repeats many of the same recommendations made by that Blue Ribbon Panel on Racial Profiling in 2000. Ideas such as conducting cultural competency trainings, hiring more officers of color, and improving data collection were all part of the plan from 9 years ago. Unlike the 2000 report, though, the new plan does not include a section on accountability, which you've already heard. It asserts the Bureau's intention to change state sunshine laws so that individual officers' traffic stops are monitored. The public will not be allowed to learn that information by law. The Chief has added to the plan one proposal that we like, which you've heard about too, the business card proposal. She also is examining why more searches are conducted on people of color and why they turn up less contraband than searches of white people, the so-called hit rate. Unfortunately, the Bureau solution to the business card idea, I agree very strongly with Ms. Bowman, that having officers print their business cards in the same piece of paper with a warning or citation is not an outreach tool or an icebreaker. It's more like a little FU attached to your ticket. So we'd like to see that. We agree with what Ms. Bowman told you, that the business card should be handed out on every interaction. In terms of examining the hit rate, this is one area we would like to be working on. Our analysis of the data from 2006 to 2008 shows that people of color are consistently searched at twice the rate of white drivers, but contraband is found only 80% as often. But because the hit rate committee is being held in private in the police bureau, we refuse to sit on the group until those meetings are open to the entire public. Finally, the Bureau's plan relies on a narrow definition of racial profiling rather than the one adopted by the police bureau that the Chief talked about. The plan refers to reliance on race in stopping or searching individuals, but the formal definition is any police-related action that relies on race, ethnicity, or national origin rather than the behavior of an individual. The difference is enormous because the second definition includes both mere conversations and use of force, which are disproportionately doled out on African Americans in Portland. Use of force, which is used 29% of the time against African Americans, is greater than the 24% of pedestrian stops and 14% of traffic stops of African American Portlanders. After the 2006 Park report on shootings was released, council members suggested that Portland State University personnel examine why so many people of color are victims of police deadly force incidents, roughly 33% in a city that is 77% white. We urge the council to see that such a study is conducted. Thanks again for the opportunity, and please feel free to ask follow-up questions.
So, Mr. Handelman, your understanding is that the only way that the police bureau would be handing out business cards is as part of the printout of a warning or citation.
That's what the plan calls for. There is a directive right now, 312.50, that tells the police if they are requested to give a business card that they have to do it. And in fact, there have been several cases that come before the police review board where the police have not done that upon request. And it seems trivial, but you've heard already why it's so important. But what we are saying, again, what Ms. Bowman said, and we completely agree, that it should just be, hi, my name is Officer So-and-so, here's my card. I mean, that should be just a natural part of every time police, even if it's a stop and talk and mere conversation, it should be any time the police officer is interacting with a citizen, it should just be a natural thing. Their tool belt has all these things on it, should have a pocket for their business cards, and they should just hand them out.
So, and the point about changing the sunshine laws, as you described them, are monitored. Do you support or oppose the being able to shield their actual identity with anonymous numbers?
Well, we don't support the idea, but it has been done in other states. And if that's what it will take for the officers, for the Bureau to drill down to individual officer level and figure out if some officers are doing this more than others, then they should find a way to do it without changing state laws and making it so that our rights as citizens to know gets chipped away.
Thank you very much, Mr. Handelman. Welcome back. Glad you're here.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. My experience using marijuana as medicine has led me to do a lot of research, and that means civil rights research, and I spent some time in prison. So I kind of know what's going on with the culture. And basically, the issue of law enforcement interaction with people should at least include the discussion of the drug laws are inherently racist. They were designed using racist concepts of who the people were that used the drugs. I know from my own research that it was just a matter of the racial stereotyping that manifested what we know as our prohibition against marijuana, and likewise with opium against Asians, and cocaine with African Americans. And we've seen the disparity in the sentencing with crack cocaine versus powdered cocaine, and we've seen mandatory minimum sentences. And what I wanted to take just a moment, I don't like to read things that I wrote to people, I just talk. But this is something that just caught my eye today. It says, the proposed federal venture into the interstate control of cannabis hardly seems to be justified by experience under the Harrison Narcotic Act. This was from 1937. After more than 20 years of federal effort and the expenditure of millions of dollars, the opium and cocaine habits are still widespread. What have we learned in 70 years? We've learned that we can use drug war tactics as a way to perpetuate the racism that we're here talking about manifesting itself as police interaction. If these drugs were not illegal, there would be no effort. We wouldn't have task forces out to, you know, address these things. So drugs are expensive. That leads to violence. Violence leads to weapons. That leads to shootings. That leads to police crackdowns. That leads to what the people have been talking about today. So I'm trying to go a little bit further upstream in history, and maybe not as far back as slavery, but sometime in the middle when we developed an alternative to those laws that allowed us to oppress those types of people that didn't look like I look like.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Mm-hmm. Thank you all. How many more do we have?
The last two are Leo Rhodes and Helen R. Sherman.
Mr. Rhodes, Ms. Sherman, welcome to the City Council. Glad you're here.
I wish I was glad to be here.
But we're glad you're here.
I don't know about that either. My name is Helen Sherman, and I have lived in Portland since 1968. I birthed three children here, and they're all grown now. I've had serious police problems when my children became teenagers, but for the boys, not the girl, which is another problem that we seriously have. Our black men are endangered. And so there was no one, I was a single parent, there was no one to help me raise these children. So there was a single parent raising children to the best of my ability to find myself in a situation in a white racist acted mean-spirited thing that goes on to people in my community. And if someone needs to tell you what you ought to do just from sitting here for all these years and seeing all this race profiling, seeing uneducated children, seeing people lose their home, and by the way, tell me, how do you save the child without saving the parent? You save the parent, and the parent would save their own children. And it's all behind racial profiling. And, you know, I've seen one of my sons beg the sheriff to take him to jail. I mean, literally, hell, take me to jail! I've seen guns pulled in my grandchildren's face. Now, if you need any more than that, I got a whole bunch. Change. It's time for a change. And by the way, I'm a member of the NAACP, and I'm here speaking for myself, not for the NAACP. They did not raise my children. And if we're going to save somebody, save the parent. We all need jobs. We need a house. We need a telephone. We need shoes. And we need parents to be sane enough to take care of their children. Keep the police out of their face. There's a lot of things that we can do. We can give the police college professor jobs. Let them teach philosophy or something. Stop killing our people. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sherman. Appreciate your testimony.
May I just comment? Mrs. Sherman, thank you. I thought it was a... That was a very helpful reminder that racial profiling and racial problems go way beyond police issues. There's disparity in
and
housing.
And they throw possums, too. And they send white supremacists to my door with a letter.
What I
now
heard.
Stop it. Tell them to stop it.
Thank you. What I heard you reminding us all, though, is it's housing disparities, it's healthcare disparities, it's schooling disparities.
It's where, everything that a black person has.
Thank you for that reminder. That's very helpful.
All right. Chief Sizer, if you could come back up. So I have on my list a number of, I guess, five things I'd like to just go over with you. One, it was brought up the request for in-dash cameras, I assume, to help document interactions that take place with vehicles involved. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
We are exploring the implementation of an in-dash camera system. We have some cameras in a few cars, and so we're looking at what it would cost to implement and run the system for all of our patrol fleet.
And when will you have that number analysis done?
We could have that by the end of the year, as well as an idea of what the options for funding that may be outside of the general fund.
So in time for the budget process?
Yeah, we can do it.
Great. The next issue raised I wanted to air out was the training videos were either outdated or not realistic as it relates to racial profiling.
Well, I think that we can agree to disagree on that matter. We presented the traffic stop courtesy video to the Racial Profiling Committee. They correctly pointed out that there were no people from communities of color represented in the videos. However, there were examples of badly conducted traffic stops and well-conducted traffic stops. And our intention was to standardize a stop that was personal and professional, that included giving the officer, presenting the person with their name and telling them the reason for the stop. When confronted by that video, not necessarily an advocate for police, David Fidanke of the ACLU said, as a member of the Law Enforcement Contact Data Collections Committee for the state, he had been trying to get training and a video of that sort for years, and they had endeavored to make a video at the State Police Academy but abandoned the project because it was so difficult and badly done. So we think that model is a good model, and we're proud of that work. And I think some of what I heard today was exactly in line with what we were attempting to do in that video.
So I'm going to give you, Chief Sizer, one more chance for me to try this line out. I'm going to try to get a laugh out of this before I'm done. Can you assure the community that were I a pretty blonde woman and not just a city commissioner, I would have still gotten my traffic ticket by a Portland police officer recently?
Well, there are I don't know that I'm going to get a laugh out of it either, because we allow officers to discretion when giving a ticket and not giving it a ticket.
So I suppose the underlying point I'm trying to make is
we try to be
I'm
fair.
A Portland City Commissioner who is well known in this community. If anybody was going to be given a favor, I was. I was actually grateful that I was not. And I'm not known to be an enemy of the police.
So
my own personal experience was that I understand how perceptions exist and whatnot, but I had a real life interchange that was professional, honorable, and done hopefully the way it would have happened to anybody in this community. And if anybody was going to be treated differently, I would have been on the positive side.
So I'm not going to attempt to micromanage your training videos, but I do think it's a fair point.
Absolutely.
That if all your training videos lack interactions that are representative of the community, that you're not necessarily training to deal with the reality of our community. So I think it's a fair point.
And I agree with that point.
And I would point out that this was one video. I think the other video that Joanne is referencing is a stock video from the Curriculum for Perspectives and Profiling that was developed by the Simon Wiesenthal Center. It included members of communities of color, and it really was around the issue of racial profiling and ethical decision making.
Oh, I thought it was all videos.
No, they just the one. Viewed okay. the one.
Let
one
me tick video. Through the. Is it on that issue?
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
Just on that issue, would you be willing to have community experts help review the training videos?
Sure.
I think that would be really helpful, having done hospital nursing for 27 years where we had to do mandatory videos and training every year. Feedback both from the offices. I know you've worked your way up through the ranks, so you understand that some trainings are more helpful than others also. So I would like you to do that
Correct.
To work with the community.
Most of our training is not delivered in a video format. The most common video tapes that we use are for what we call roll call videos, where members of the training division and other people will update officers on the latest technique or a change. We'll have a video by the city attorney's office in the change of law, for example. So what we did around traffic stops was part of a larger curriculum that we delivered in in-service training. But our standard practice is not training by video.
So would there be an opportunity, sorry to keep going, but would the, is there an, are there opportunities for, say, female officers of color to give feedback on any training, whether in person or video, as to whether she found it culturally and
sure.
Would officers be comfortable doing that to say that this is really not very helpful?
Yeah, I think so.
And I think the general point is, and I appreciate the clarification there, Ms. Bowman is in the gallery saying more than one video. I think the point is if a flashpoint is vehicular police enforcement around race, then it would be useful to have training videos around police vehicular enforcement that involves sort of different races. I think that's the general point you're trying to make. So it's about flashpoint, where
point
the flashpoints
taken.
Are. Business cards for all interactions. I guess it's only become clear to me during this hearing that you were the business card was going to be on a warning or a citation. What stands in the way of, which I think is a good idea, but I want you to have a chance to say why it's challenging, of business cards being handed out during interactions?
The first thing I'd like to say is thank you for not attempting to micromanage our videos, and I would thank you in advance for not attempting to micromanage the exactly how we conduct traffic stops as well. Our current policy has as one of its elements that a police officer, upon request, will hand a community member a business card. I think in most cases, officers willingly comply. I think there are some cases where they either refuse or they don't have one with them, legitimately don't have one on their person, although they should. I have talked to my members about rather than waiting for someone to demand your card, that you should, and I use the word, you should dispense them prophylactically. And their response was, you mean we have to give them at the beginning of an encounter? And on a traffic stop, that initial engagement is also a point at which there is a special danger for police officers. As you may or may not know, traffic stops along with family disturbances are some of the most dangerous things police officers do. So when they walk up on that car, they are walking up on the car of a stranger, and they don't know their intentions. So the idea that they're going to be walking up with a card as opposed to really attending to the possibility that that car may contain a threat, I wouldn't expect them to do it in the first order. But when they engage, the video that Joanne Bowman was referencing, that very early on, they should be introducing themselves. Hello, I'm Officer Sizer. The reason why I stopped you was because you ran that stop sign, or you were exceeding the speed limit, or what have you. And then my intention at the end was to give both either a written warning or a traffic citation and a copy of a business card. And I think that is meeting both the direction, the expectation, and the spirit of what I heard in those community dialogues. Unfortunately, when most people encounter a police officer, for example, when Commissioner Leonard did, in a traffic stop, it is inherently punitive seeming. And it's, we don't stop people just to say hi. And so to say that giving a business card at the end of the stop conjoins it with a punitive element, well, the nature of traffic stops is a motorist is doing something that we think is a violation of the law, and there is an inherent tension around that.
So can I just follow up on that point for a second? Because I think this raises an issue in terms of my service here on the council and the various reactions I've had from bureau heads between the issue of micromanaging and managing. And sometimes bureau heads like to use the word micromanaging to avoid having to do anything at all that the elected wants. And there is the danger of getting in too deep, and I agree in what happens. I think what you're hearing from the council is we want to manage the police bureau. We don't want to micromanage, we want to manage it. The message you heard from us was not when a card should be given, but that at every exchange at the appropriate time, and you absolutely pointed out a time that would not be appropriate to do that, but at the end of even that exchange, a business card needs to be handed out. So I'm hoping you hear the clear message from us right. is that on every interchange at the appropriate time, whether it's at the beginning or the end, completely up to the judgment of the officer, we want a business card handed out.
Right. And I was responding to the prior testimony.
No, and that was useful. I think that
where it suggested that there was a time that it should be given and shouldn't.
That's not what we're asking. We're asking that you acknowledge that we would like to have business cards handed out at every exchange, even dangerous ones at the end of them. Right. What seemingly are dangerous ones at some point that the person not have to ask, who are you, that's that a card be handed out.
And that's the direction we're taking.
Great. And I think that that applies to all of our employees. So we're not just picking on the police bureau, but all of our employees that, I mean, there are exceptions to that, I'm sure, in maintenance operations where they're working on the streets. But we're trying to provide the public ways to easily identify the people that are working for them.
So I'm going to follow this up with, because sometimes it's important for clarity, is that a management tool you intend to implement?
Yes.
And do you know what date by which you will do that?
For stops?
For any interchange with police officers and the public, not just hello, how are you, nice to see you, but let me give you just my example. In the fire bureau, when a fire inspector does anything that's official related to their duties, whether it's responding to an EMS call or inspecting a building, at some point in that exchange, the officer or one of the firefighters hands a business card so that if any follow-up is needed, they know who to call up. If an officer stops somebody, what are you doing? You're not behaving correctly. There's been calls that I've received. You kind of fit this person. At some time at that point in that exchange, I would expect out of what we're talking about here, a business card to be handed.
So you're talking formal and official.
If somebody stops, hey, Officer Myers, nice to see you. Oh, how are you doing? Well, I'm in treatment. Thank you very much for getting me there. Of course not. Not a business card there. But any, I think, common sense definition that that would be where I would be micromanaged if I tried to define that for you, but I think you understand the intent mm-hmm. of what the council is explaining to you. At some point in an exchange, it doesn't have to be at the beginning, it doesn't have to be at the end, but at the point at which it's appropriate, only deemed by the officer involved in his or her judgment, we want a business card handed to that person. And I guess I'm asking when, by what date will that happen?
And I'm sorry I can't give you a absolute date because I am marrying it to the implementation of e-tickets. And